In tonight's State of the Union, the president said he wants to raise taxes on millionaires. Lots of Americans like the idea of making millionaires pay more, so why not? Let's go to our panel. David Bose of the Cato Institute is back with us, along with economic blogger Megan McArdle and Reason magazine editor Matt Welch. So, I'm rich. I could afford to pay more. People like the idea of sticking it to people like me. Why not?
Well, the problem here is that we have a government spending problem more than we have a government revenue problem. This is the huge, you know, hammer hanging over our heads.
Doubled
right now.
Since President Clinton.
Yes, under George W. Bush, he increased non-defense discretionary spending by 60%. It wasn't just about Iraq. It was bipartisan big government. We have to cut that, especially in advance of the baby boomers retiring, when we have Medicare and Social Security hanging over our heads. Obama didn't mention this at all. There is a single paragraph with about two lines. Mitch Daniels devoted his entire speech to it. You have to address that if you have any claims or pretense on being serious about governing in America, period.
True, but you didn't really address the issue of inequality, which galls people. Some of us are much richer than others. Why not level the field?
Well, part of it is that the devil is in the details. Right now, Obama has made this very point in many, many, many speeches since he was elected.
And it appeals to people.
It does, and yet he hasn't done anything about it. And why? So when you look at actually why does Mitt Romney pay a low tax rate? Why does Warren Buffett pay a low tax rate? Well, a lot of it starts with the tax-free status of municipal bonds. Does anyone want our local infrastructure projects to cost more? Well, if not, If we change that tax-free status, then the bonds will have to pay higher interest rates in order to attract investors, and suddenly our subways cost twice as much. No one wants that. Do we want to charge more for investments so that we get less investment from rich people, which would have clawed up the tax rate on Warren Buffett and Mitt Romney, but would have depressed investment in the capital
sector? But what about the thing he's proposing, the basic millionaires have to pay at least 30% and lose deductions?
Well, this is the problem, right? Now, we already actually have this very proposal called the alternative minimum tax. It was put into place in the 70s to deal with precisely this issue with rich people who didn't pay any taxes. And 30 years later, it's threatening to engulf the middle class, and so we do this temporary fix every year. What he's proposing to do is add yet another layer of complexity that will work for a few years. I think in the year that it was enacted, there were 12 people who had not paid any tax. But we'll eventually just complicate our tax code, make it even worse than it is now, a tax code that Obama himself agrees is already in extremely bad shape and far too complicated to deal with.
One thing that struck me, after Bill Clinton suffered a bad midterm election, the Republicans took Congress, President Clinton said this.
The era of big government is over.
And listen to the applause. It sounded like Republicans and Democrats. And of course, it didn't happen and only got bigger after he served. And Obama doesn't even talk about this.
Well, technically, they did reform welfare shortly after that speech, and they did constrain spending. They didn't cut it, but it went up at a lower rate. So there was a little bit of slowing down of the growth of spending. But you're right, Obama did not say that, and it is a very similar thing. A Democratic president who pushed far to the left, got slapped down in his first midterm election, now he's running for re-election, and he did not say that. He did say he wanted smart and effective government, and several times he referred to regulations he was going to get rid of.
He's getting rid of regulations,
right? He's getting rid of regulations. In fact, he found one from 40 years ago about spilled milk. And one of the things that struck me about that was, even when the regulation is so stupid, President Obama recognizes it.
And
it
jokes
takes 40
about it.
Years to get rid of a really stupid regulation, which is a good reason not to pass regulations unless you're really sure you need them.
I think one thing about...
I just want to put that chart up that shows one other stupid thing about the regulations, that they bragged about the ones they cut, and they did cut regulations that they said will save us over $1 billion. But the total regulations that Obama's advanced, he admits, would cost $233 billion. Matt,
he's showing, as the Clinton clip shows, because that was his fourth year. That was 1996. It wasn't even 95. That was the equivalent year of Obama. Clinton had a learning curve. When Americans told him, we don't like what you're doing, you're going to change your policies and your ways. Obama tonight showed zero learning curve. His economic policies have delivered none of the results that were promised, and so he's going to double down on them. Last year, he talked about a moonshot with investing in clean, green jobs. This year, he said, let's do more of it, even after Solyndra. We're in a Greece, Italy-style debt scenario. He's not even talking about it. He is not learning from his mistakes.
But maybe he is, because in the betting, he's the favorite, selling for 56 cents this morning on Intrade. Coming up, my State of the Union address, what I wish the president would have said. But next, China was part of the president's speech. We'll discuss that, and the military next.
For the first time in 9 years, there are no Americans fighting in Iraq.
So let me ask the audience, who liked hearing that? And isn't that a wonderful thing? Let's show a hand. Okay, who wouldn't like that? This is certainly progress under President Obama. He says he'd pulled the soldiers out, and he has pulled them out of Iraq and Afghanistan to some extent, but I'm confused. In Iraq, we leave an embassy staffed by 16,000 people. A typical embassy has a few hundred people. 16,000 doesn't sound like the war is really over. And he says he brought them home from Afghanistan, and he did, but before that, he increased the numbers, adding 300% more than President Bush had stationed there. So is this ending wars? Let's go back to our all-star panel. David Bowes of the Cato Institute, blogger Megan McArdle, and Matt Welch of Reason Magazine. So you're anti-war, you should be happy.
I'm happier that there are fewer Americans there now than there were before. We'll see if we ever get a troop level down below 10,000 in Iraq. And in the meantime, he has created a new war in Libya, and justification, and even language tonight that suggested...
He said a year ago, Gaddafi was one of the world's longest-serving dictators. Today, he's gone.
Totally, totally true. Let's not forget that wars cause dictators to lose their jobs. That doesn't solve the riddle of when the U.S. should go to war, and we have no more clear answer about that tonight than we did 5 years ago. Barack Obama said on the campaign trail, not that he's anti-war, that he's anti-dumb war. And so now he's starting smart war, and we'll see if he starts new smart wars in Iran and in Syria.
And maybe we'll get a trade war. He said he's announcing the creation of a trade enforcement unit that will be charged with investigating unfair trade practices in countries like China, which resonates with people. Those evil Chinese, they're ripping us off by giving us cheap stuff.
I'm glad there's one thing we can all agree on, which is that we hate Chinese people. You know, this has been a kind of resounding issue for Obama, and I have to admit, I, during his campaign, defended him on the grounds that, like, Austin Goolsbee defended him to the Canadians. He probably didn't really mean it. I think he kind of did mean it. He really worries that somewhere out there, there may be a Chinese person who is conspiring to put an iPhone in your hands, and he's going to get between you and make sure that that doesn't happen, at least.
Mitt Romney seems to agree with him.
It is a very, very popular platform because people don't like competition.
But you're the economic blogger. Explain why this is not necessarily a good idea.
Well, you know, you actually, for example, the Chinese tire, those nefarious Chinese tire manufacturers, he says, you know, I've saved 1,000 American jobs from this conspiracy of tire manufacturers. And this may be true, although the accounting for these things is usually pretty dodgy. But what he doesn't actually mention is that, no, you've saved 1,000 American jobs by paying more for each tire that goes on your car. And in a time when households are really pinched, that matters. That's a big cost to impose on people in order to save a fairly small number of jobs.
And the extra money you spent on tires, you might have invested in something else, which would have created other jobs.
Exactly.
But and those are harder to see. David Bowes, can you comment on the wars or on the trade wars?
I'm glad that we are winding down the wars. I seem to recall him saying over and over and over and over, I will end this war, the Iraq war, in 2009, and I will bring the troops home. And it took him two more years. But still, he did end it. I guess that counts for something. But you're right. This embassy of 16,000 people, that is not an embassy staff. That's an occupation force. And so we are still in Iraq. We're going to be there a long time. We've still got troops in Korea 60 years after the war ended. And I think that's what we're headed for in Iraq.
And one last point on the economy here. He said, General Motors is now today back on top as the world's number one automaker. The auto industry is back.
It's great. All it took was a tsunami followed by a nuclear meltdown wiping out your competitor's supply chain. America is back on top.
Plus $50 billion in subsidies.
Yeah, plus $50 billion in subsidies. It's extraordinary that the administration is actually pushing this as one of their successes. When GM went public, it was estimated that they went public at 33. It was estimated that their stock would have to go up to 50 for the United States to actually break even on the transaction. As of this afternoon, it was at 24. So we're now set to lose somewhere between $10 and $20 billion on this great administration triumph.
So you could argue that actually comparatively, Solyndra is a triumph for this administration.
Exactly.
Triumph of industrial planning. David, Megan, Matt, stick around. The audience wants to grill you. But next, a presidential candidate who I wish had given the State of the Union, and maybe next year he will. That's next. Welcome back to our special live edition of Stossel and our all-star panel. Live means you can be part of the show, and our first question is from Facebook, which just came in from Scott Phelps. Talked about the president talking about manufacturing. Haven't jobs in manufacturing been declining everywhere? Don't we just need fewer people in manufacturing, just as we need fewer people in farming relative to 100 years ago? Anyone?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things that he really didn't mention is the terrible competition that American workers face from robots. You walk into a GM factory these days, and a lot of what's going on the floor is that there, you know, a car goes in and 50 robot arms come out and they do all the spot welds and then the car moves on.
The politician's solution is banning robots?
When
robotics start out, yeah, politicians take on robotics as replacing jobs.
An economist with a sense of humor said, if you really want to create jobs, outlaw farm machinery. You get 60 million jobs instantly.
And instead of having people dig with shovels, you have them use spoons. And then you start to see that this doesn't really work. Another quickly from Facebook. Reward teachers according to their ability. Fire the ones that don't contribute. Doesn't that sound like the free market?
Absolutely. I think when it comes to education, you got to give education back to the states. 50 laboratories of innovation and best practice. And I think what you'd see is you'd see some fabulous success that would get emulated.
Of course, states isn't free market, really. That's still state government.
If you want to look at education and a potential free market kind of a view of it, I think that's how you do it. But you get the federal government out of education because one size does not fit all.
Let's go to the audience. Yes, sir. Who's first? Yes, sir.
President Obama had spoke about coming to peaceful resolutions with Iran, but how would he go about having peaceful resolutions when he has military bases all around the country?
That's a good question. And you know, that's what set Ron Paul's campaign in motion 4 years ago when he and Rudy Giuliani clashed over the question of whether American actions in the Middle East create reactions. And there are a lot of Americans who don't want to hear that our actions have consequences.
That are offended by that.
They are offended by that. They say, you're saying it's America's fault. No, it's not America's fault. But when you put troops in the Middle East, you can expect some people, some 14-year-old boys, some governments, to get angry at you, and some of them may turn into terrorists. And this is one of the major arguments for non-intervention. Stop poking at hornet's nests. Iran is a bad government. In fact, it's two different bad governments battling to see who can actually have total control. Nevertheless, we don't need to be poking at that hornet's nest.
And let's remember what Obama said tonight. He said that I will take nothing off the table when it comes to preventing them from getting a nuclear weapon.
And isn't the fact that Iran is raising its head an unintended consequence of us having taken out Iraq and Saddam Hussein? That was their only real concern on a daily basis, was the threat from Iraq. We take them out. Now this is a situation where I don't think it's a military threat, but we should be vigilant to it. But currently, not a military threat.
Yes, sir, with the don't tread on me button.
Yes, thank you. Three of the largest items we have in a budget are Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. The president barely glazed over those tonight. What can be done to bring these entitlements into financial balance?
Well, he dedicated three sentences to them tonight, but when it comes to Medicaid and Medicare, having overseen the reform of Medicaid in New Mexico, I think the federal government should block grant the states a fixed amount of money, 43% less than what we're currently spending, and leave it up to the states, 50 laboratories of innovation and best practice to deliver health care to the poor and those over 65. And I'm going to tell you, they will do it. They'll be
with 43% less money.
With 43%
people will
less
die money. In the streets.
Of course, oh. Going to be the criticism. That's going to be the outcry. But in New Mexico, I oversaw the reform of Medicaid, and I believe that is very possible if the federal government grants that money and does away with all the strings and all the mandates. But what we need to understand is if we don't reform it, we're going to find ourselves with nothing. I mean, that's the alternative, a monetary collapse where we're left with nothing.
Any of the rest of you want to solve that most difficult problem?
Well, I mean, we're in a position right now where Medicare is just about to turn into the sucking chest wound of the federal budget, and something has to be done. You can't just lie there and think, well, maybe it'll go away if I pretend I can't see the blood trickling out onto the ground. That's really the position that we're in right now. The problem is, obviously, it's incredibly popular, and so despite the fact that Obama, especially if he gets reelected, really is going to have to be the president who addresses this, there's no more time to think, well, maybe some other guy's going to fix it. He hasn't, precisely because he doesn't want to be the guy who actually balances the budget. He wants to be the guy who hands out the goodies, and then the next president can maybe come in and deal with the mess that he's left. And he's not alone in that. Every president before him has taken the same position.
And speaking of next presidents, Mitt Romney is running explicitly on a campaign to Obama's left on Medicare. Every day in Florida, he says, and Obama, he cut Medicare by $500 billion.
When just a few short years ago, Republicans controlled both houses of Congress and the presidency, they passed a prescription health care benefit, which at that time was the largest entitlement program ever passed in the history of this country. Unaffordable then, unaffordable now.
And Newt Gingrich is bragging on the campaign trail that he's proud of his role in pushing it.
One more question, yes.
The president repeatedly referenced wealthy paying their fair share. What is fair share, and who determines what fair share is?
Good question. Who wants that?
I'm advocating throwing out the entire federal tax system and replacing it with the fair tax. I think the notion of doing away with all existing federal taxes, income tax, corporate tax, really reboots the American economy for the next 100 years.
The fair tax is basically a sales tax.
Consumption tax that ends up to be revenue neutral over a very short period of time, makes American goods and services 23% more competitive. It's the answer to trade with China. And I think it's the answer when it comes to jobs. If in a zero corporate tax rate environment, the private sector doesn't create tens of millions of jobs, I don't know under what environment tens of millions of jobs will get created.
But this fairness argument is even bigger than that.
It's a great argument because it's deliciously vague, right? Everyone can listen to it and think, oh, yeah, he's going to take the money from the people I don't like and give it to the people I do like. The fact is that you're never going to get a completely fair tax code because everyone in the country, we have 300 million different definitions of what is fair. Should we tax money that someone has saved and goes out and earns them more money and may make them rich, but they had to defer consumption and work hard and not buy a new TV or any of the other delightful things that we can spend our money on in order to make that extra return? Should we tax that higher because that person is rich, or lower because they had to do something really difficult that not a lot of us succeed in doing? These are questions that, you know, they're value judgments that won't get resolved, and I think ultimately they're the wrong way to look at the tax code. You start with what do we need to do, and then you think about what's the best way to finance it with the least impact on the most number of people.
And in doing that, you can recognize that for most of our history in post-World War II, the federal government has subsisted at around 19% of GDP in taxes. We're now at 25%.
And we are now out of town. We will be right back.